Welcome to The Talkies, a weekly film podcast with me, Lucy Smith.
And me, Michael Henry.
This week we'll be discussing romance.
Should we do a version where you go, romance? Or is that too much?
We should just keep this bit in, it's hilarious. It's very embarrassing for you.
Romance. All right, well, yeah, well, that's a great way to start. There's nothing more romantic than embarrassing yourself. So,
that's true, actually, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I feel like we should start with yours because I've picked a very straightforward, I'm not going to say obvious choice, but a film that's entirely about relationships, whereas yours has a very interesting relationship, but it's not about that. So do you want to start with your pick?
Yeah, sure. So my pick is Fight Club. And for those who don't know Fight Club, don't talk about it. I just made that up. Do you like it?
I really hoped you wouldn't do that.
This is so embarrassing already, this episode.
It's great.
Okay, right. Yeah. Okay, yeah, Fight Club. So, how to say this without spoilers? Yeah, this guy who's sick of life meets a friend who looks like Brad Pitt.
That sounds like Stand By Me. It doesn't sound like a film where people get their face destroyed.
Yeah, he just happens to like beating people up and thinks that that's the
and
way
they
to
fall
spirit.
In love and everything's fine.
Yeah, so at the very start of the film, Marla, who is arguably what this film's about and therefore is a romance film, or maybe just obsession film, I'm not sure. Yeah, so this guy starts going to things like support groups to try and feel, basically, and suffers from narcolepsy.
No, insomnia.
Can I spoil?
Insomnia.
And narcolepsy.
Wait, no, narcolepsy is where you just fall. Oh, yeah, no, technically he does. Sorry, I could have spoiled something there. Carry on.
Can I spoil it? Doesn't everyone know what Fight Club
is? Yeah, spoil it. I'm all for it. If you haven't watched a film that's in the top 100 lists, then we're allowed to spoil. Like Star Wars, Darth Vader's his dad. Next.
Fair. Okay. So, yeah. So, basically, I guess we're dealing with, like, split personality. So, basically, it starts off and he's got his lovely life, his IKEA furniture and his great job, supposedly. And sort of tosses it all in for his new kind of other version of himself, this alter ego. And starts setting up fight clubs for men who just want to fight and doing explosives.
Yeah, it becomes basically more of like a guerrilla army militia type thing where they're anti-capitalist and just
rejecting consumerism and all that. So but I would say Marla is all caught up in this, in that he's sort of having this little battle to find himself and she's at the edge like, he doesn't realise he's got a relationship with her. He thinks it's Tyler.
Yeah. So I want to ask, why was this your pick? Because it is romantic in its weird, dark way. And I think you're right. It is kind of about her, even if you look at it and go, oh, it's about masculinity and extreme politics and anti-consumerism. It is kind of a love story too. So why was this your pick, I'd like to ask?
I think it was quite hard for me to pick for this week, mostly because most of the romance films I've watched are utter trash and I still love them to bits, but I didn't really fancy talking about them that long of a time. Fight Club, I was obsessed with this late teens. I can't count the amount of times I've watched this, and I actually did an essay on the love story in it in A-levels. So.
Interesting. I did an essay on it, but with regards to like Kierkegaard and all the other stuff. But anyway, so the reason that you decided not to pick the sort of trashier ones, is that because they don't really reflect your experiences of romance, whereas this kind of does a bit more?
I wouldn't say that. There's lots of different types of romance, and very rare is it like the fairy tale ones, but they're still valid to watch if you want to. But I think I picked this because I knew that yours was two people in love, and I'm not saying mine's not, there's different kinds of love, but it's very destructive and it's sort of anti-romance. So I felt like it was the other side of the coin.
No, I agree. I think it was a really good pick. It was such a good pick that I went, wait, do you mean for this episode or do you mean for this episode?
Yeah.
But it does work. And I think what works with yours that's kind of a general thing for any romance in general, any romantic film or relationship is, particularly with Fight Club, I think most relationships, whether that's dating or like 50 years of marriage, it's like two magnets that you kind of, if you flip them around, like you're drawn to each other, but also there can be the, if one moves one way too far, the other one moves away. Does that make sense? You know, like the opposite, the polar opposite of something. That might just be the worst metaphor ever, but I think that's, if someone is a bit too desperate or they lean in, the other person moves away. If someone plays it quite cool, the other person leans that way. Obviously, that can go too far if you play it too cool, if you're too arrogant or too anything. But I
don't know if this film shows that. All it shows is Marla going after him even when he treats her like crap. I don't think there's the opposite of that.
No, I meant more for his sake, that he doesn't realise what he's got until it's gone, in a way. Because he also doesn't realise it's him. But then when he, when he
it's does... complicated.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about, but when he does realise what she represents and what she can be for him, that's where he starts to make the effort. And he does open up at the end, and he is...
Yeah, I mean, he fights for it. Ugh, it's hard. It's not... That's the thing. I think romance films, and maybe why this isn't a romance film, even though it's interesting to talk about, is that romance films show the connection between two people and show why it's rare. You don't get that in Fight Club. You get him realising, going, okay, you need to get out of town. And at the end, he gets... Tyler, also him, gets his men to kidnap her. She arrives. What the fuck are you doing? Oh, you've shot your face. Oh, I'll hold your hand.
Spoiler.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Again, if you haven't watched it and you're listening to this episode, you should have seen it coming.
But yeah, I would say they've both got... Their morality's all... messed up, both of them, and they both don't find life precious, really. They're both sort of waiting to die.
Yeah, I'd say they're both
quite
nihilistic, and they're definitely like outsiders, and that's where I think it's kind of sweet in a weird way, is that it is an example of outsiders finding each other, and that's always interesting to watch.
That's true.
I think
the main things with this film that link to romance for me that's interesting is, number one, you got the idea of like extreme bachelorhood. Like, what is more bachelory than making a group where only men are allowed in? And, you know, he's got this line, we're a generation of men raised by women. I'm wondering if another woman is the answer. And, yeah, this just the way women are treated. But at the end, Tyler's rejected, woman comes in. Yeah, I don't know. Don't quite know what it's saying there.
It's not. I don't feel like it's an anti-feminist film. I mean, it's
no.
It's an overly masculine film, but it's critiquing that. It's a tough one because in some ways, I feel like this film was released probably about 10 years, maybe 15 years too early, because it kind of predicted a lot of where we've gone with. They're not really a far right group, but there's a lot of like the incel culture and kind of men feeling like they're. What's the word? Not impotent, but there's that impotent rage.
Emasculated.
Where it's like, that's what I'm thinking of, where it's like, we don't have a place anymore, and that's why they start up these male-only clubs. But then it gets out of hand, and the person who set it up is the one who's like, I don't know it's...
Reel this back in, fellas.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the way... I was going to say this for my pick, but I feel like it applies to yours, that the way a person responds to the ending of this film as well... kind of says a lot about how they perhaps are in relationships in a weird way, that
I'm definitely
optimism drawn
or pessimism
definitely those two, and like whether you see things romantically or whatever, I think I get it with this film, that they're both really messed up, and that is kind of what I'm drawn to. I hate to say it, but I could see being, maybe not shoot my own face off, but I could see like, she's not the obvious pretty glamour girl, for instance, that all of the raw edges and the vulnerabilities and, you know, the frank bluntness to a lot of the things she says throughout, that's attractive, I think. I think that's that's someone, maybe not the perfect relationship, but yeah, I feel like I dug a massive hole there for myself.
You've already embarrassed yourself. You can only go down the slide.
It's too late, yeah.
Yeah, I also love that they sort of like play on rom-com stuff. So like when he first meets her at the start, he describes her like a tumour and he just like can't stop thinking about her. And there's this moment just after he's like tried to basically tell her, I'm really sorry, I've just realised that was me as well. And like, you need to get out of town. And as the like the bus doors close, it was really weird. It felt like a play on a rom-com moment, because that's the moment when someone goes like, yeah, I love you or whatever. But instead she says, you're the worst thing that ever happened to me. And like,
And it is definitely anti-romantic for those reasons. Like, instead of him chasing her down when she gets on the bus, it's like, get on the bus, get away from me. And early on too, like you say, there is that kind of, it's the opposite of a meet cute. They're meeting at like a TB survivors meeting, or prostate
that's,
cancer and all this kind of stuff.
That's a meet cute, right?
I don't know if I'd go that far as to say, I don't know, maybe. I'm not at that age yet. I haven't reached the desperation of these focus groups to help groups to find love. But, you know, maybe in a couple of years.
We can only dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like, to be honest, the most romantic thing in this film is the way the narrator / Tyler looks at violence and, like, all this sort of enlightening stuff.
There's kind of a weird bromance between, like, the way he perceives Tyler, as in Brad Pitt personifying Tyler, is kind of, there is that like looking up to him. I mean, he's objectively the prettiest looking man ever in this film. That's kind of,
I think,
the point.
There's jealousy, that, you know, he looks like he wants to look, acts like he wants to look, has the balls to do stuff.
And I think there's definitely the same kind of, not the same kind of attraction, but there's definitely some, there's homoerotic overtones to a lot of what goes on in this film too, I'd say.
That's fair. Yeah.
So you've got all the angles covered here. Anti-romance.
It's got everything.
Romance. Yeah. And there was me thinking of picking Call Me By Your Name. You picked quite the... You picked the better version. can you imagine if Call Me By Your Name was just... They met and they started fighting.
I ain't seen
it. It's such a different film. Oh, okay. Well, it's about... I'm not going to... Yeah, there's not enough time to get into
that. Okay.
Gay men, and one's slightly younger than the other one.
Okay.
That's the gist of it. It's beautiful, though. It's, I highly recommend.
I mean, that could have been... It was my, like, a thought of mine that we haven't looked at love in different cultures or between different genders or, like, polygamous love. We've both chosen two couples, but, you know.
True. But
there's still a lot
to
talk about.
Yeah. And we've covered bromance. We had an episode on LGBT and... Yeah, okay. Should we move on to my picks? I feel like there could be a slight segue into...
Yeah, talking of meet-cutes.
Yeah, so my pick is... I couldn't pick one of these films. It had to be all three. So the Before trilogy, which is Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight. They were shot 9 years apart, each one. So 1994, 2003, and 2012. I could have picked something like Casablanca or Eternal Sunshine or something like that, but they've... I don't think any film I've ever seen or any films capture romance, relationships, just the full spectrum of the good and the bad of a relationship quite like these three films. So I'll have to speed this up a little bit because it's three films, but it's an American guy and a French woman who meet on a train in on the way to Vienna, well, on the way to Paris, but he's getting off at Vienna. They briefly chat and he says, I'm getting off here. Would you walk around the city with me before I get my flight? So there's a time constraint and they just start talking. They start hanging out. And over the course of an hour and 30 minutes or the course of half a day, they slowly start to fall for each other, but realize, well, he's getting a flight back to America. She doesn't live in Vienna. She lives in Paris. It's like, could this possibly work? And so the end of the first film is, although they've realised that they've found each other and it's beautiful, they arrange to meet in a few months, or I think it's a year later, with the intention of, like, you know, maybe we could pick this up again and it could be a big deal. And, yeah, the fact is that that's the idealistic, romantic side of things. But then the other two, like I say, are set 9 years ahead and then another 9 years ahead. So if you know that there's three films, you know that they do meet again. I'm not going to get into specifics, but I do have to bring up that second one they meet again, but they never met up like they planned to with the first one, for instance. And with the third one, it's very much like later in life where they're together, but maybe it's not perfect. That's all I'll say. You enjoyed this, right? Like, of what you've seen.
So I watched the first film. Yeah, I really loved it. I don't think, I mean, I know it's like idealized at the end, but for a lot of that, they're trying to be rational and say, we won't meet again. And then at the end, they're like, oh God, yes, we will.
Yeah.
So I think it handles that really well.
And it doesn't feel like corny or trashy. I feel like the reason that these two as a couple or on-screen couple, it's so rich and it's conversations that you would have. And there's never a moment where you feel like that's not what would happen. Even when it's...
This is the thing, yeah, because like a lot of romances, the plot has to move so fast that even if the characters are technically in love by then, you haven't felt it and it feels like fake love. Whereas this, it captured one night, but really well. Like, you can see why they go for each other.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, as much as I love High Fidelity, that feels like... It still feels like the rom-com storytelling version, like you said. I think it's richer than that, but I think this is one of the few things I've seen where, I mean, a few other picks, I was thinking of Blue Valentine and stuff like this, but they're always the bleak angle where it's like, it feels real because it's how messy it gets. And this does get messy. Like the third film, there's a 30-minute long argument that's one of the rawest things I've ever seen. I rewatched it this morning and it brings up a lot. You start to question what you've said to other people and yeah, we'll get back to that. So let's talk about romantic idealism, because that's what the first one embodies. Do you feel like it captures something that you've experienced before? Do you feel like it feels realistic without being too, well, without being boring, I guess?
I had a really weird reaction to a lot of the bits, like a welled up in my chest and then it came out in a laugh. It was really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... I really loved what it did. I mean, at the end, you see where they've been hanging out in the daylight, and it's just completely flattened and changed.
Without them. I think that's why it's more... All three of them feel more profound than just two people meet, fall in love. I mean, it is more than that. But I think showing the plate... It's all about the passage of time. Like, the fact they shot 9 years apart adds something to that, too. And I think... Like you've said, like showing the places that they spent this time together, but they're not there anymore. I remember watching this when I was like 16, 17, and it was like an epiphany. It was like, oh, okay, that's time and everything and how special it is when you do connect with someone and how fleeting it is. And
I was going to say, it's not just time, but it's like what has been created. This is a good film for showing what like love can create. I like, it's so beautifully written as well. I like... I mean, what she's going on about, they're very different too. They're yin and yang in a way, which I want to ask a question about later. But yeah, and she's saying any magic in this world is in the space between two people, and it's about sharing time, space, lives and stuff. You can't do it alone. And yeah, and you see, they show visually how they transform little spaces into like little pockets of magic. I think I've never seen that done on screen. Well, and that definitely is a feeling I've felt in real life, and it just captured that.
Yeah, I feel like, but in particular, in the first one, when they're in the record store, put a piece of music on, and then for 30 seconds they don't say anything, but it's just them thinking about kissing one another, but not knowing how to communicate it yet.
I'm so glad they didn't kiss, because I thought they would, because that's what would happen in any other romance, almost any other romance film. But yeah, they did it just right, because you don't get the balls to do it for ages, and it's
Well, I feel like that's what these films in particular have perfected, is the several looks in each one of the films that say everything, but they don't say a single word. And that one in the record store is one. There's a moment, I think, where they're kind of pretending to phone call each other too. There's a look between them there where you can just see, oh, this is real. Like, I mean, their chemistry is incredible. And I think you will be watching the other films, I presume, at some point. It only gets better too. Like with the passage of time, things get more complicated, and therefore it feels there's more weight to every second. Like the final 15 minutes of the second one is probably the best sequence of the whole That's not true. I don't know. There's too much to love about all three of these. Like, I can't say enough about it to praise it. I think it's perfect start to finish, all three.
I think it's interesting you talking about, like, romantic ideals and stuff, because I think...
Because you don't think I'm a romantic.
No, I wasn't. Newsflash, I wasn't going to talk about you. sorry, that was really harsh.
That's very true.
No, I was going to say that...
Sorry, carry on.
I think it's interesting that you're talking about, like, romantic ideals and stuff, because I think the film, in a lot of places, like, his word means a lot, but in a lot of places, like, quietly proves her right whenever she's being optimistic. She does have, like, rational thoughts as well, but...
Well, I think he's more romantic than her, though.
No, he has, like, well, or maybe, he might maybe be, but view, he comes out with all these lines that are, like, very sceptical, and she will answer back with something that's quite sort of grounded and
or maybe
you don't
maybe
know
I
that.
Have the benefit of hindsight of the other two, maybe, and that's warped it, but I always felt that he seems sceptical but is secretly romantic, whereas she appears optimistic and this and that, but she's actually more of the realist and the more, particularly with the second one, I would say, and moments of the third.
I guess they change then, because in the first film, like, there's a bit where he's like, people get sick of each other, I know they will. And she's basically saying she knows she's in love when she knows exactly what shirt they're going to wear that day and what story they're going
to
tell.
I feel like that
given situation.
Is the key to everything we're basically talking about, is that I think it boils down to those things, because I've had a range of relationships, and I think for me, when I know everything about a person, I get bored and bail, essentially. That's not true of everyone, but I think at some point in a relationship this is true.
Usually, I really don't want to analyze, sorry,
no,
but usually in movies anyway, when someone's like that, it's more that they're scared that they're boring too.
Oh, definitely.
And that's why they
run.
And
also, and I mean, from a personal perspective, it's just because I don't want to get hurt. I'll bail before the other person can bail on me. But that's a whole rabbit hole. We won't go down that. I think, well, what this does really well, especially with the third one, again, I'm not going to spoil anything, is there's a monologue where he explains how this is true love because it's imperfect, that you have to accept. At some point, you will be faced with the idea, can I live with the flaws of this person? Because, yes, like with the first film, they're falling in love with the best of each other, but they haven't lived together. They haven't had children. They haven't, you know, spent long periods of time. Like, it's a very short romantic period of time. You cannot... I think what's unfortunate in some ways is some of the, like, briefer relationships I've had have probably... They've become martyrs more than the people I've been with for, like, 3 years or so. Because it's such a short, intense thing. And then it's, like, it's over and then it lingers because you're, like... Oh, it's something I didn't get all of it. I didn't drain it for everything. It was
there was no
like, that's
time
a bad way
for it to get
it.
Sour. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it obviously gets sour because it doesn't last, but it's a different kind of.
Not always, but yeah, I know.
Well,
what
I one thing I want to ask is, like, what do you think an ingredient is for people who, like, grandparents? I think most grandparents, they do stick together for like 50 odd years. I can't even. I think my grandparents have been together 65 years, maybe more than that. That they even talk about this in, like, their grandparents and their, how their parents are different. And I don't know, I'm not sure I know what the ingredient is for long, long lasting like that. Sorry to put you on the spot as if you know, but yeah.
I think I do. In the case of, like, grandparents and stuff, it was the, either religiously or societally, the taboo of breaking up or divorcing was enough to not, like, it wasn't as much of an option and therefore you stick it out. Like, if getting out is an option, if it's taken away, I think people can do anything together. They can work at anything together and at least make a... They might have some years of really not liking this. And I know there's stuff that my granddad did that drove my nana crazy, but she still looks back at it. You know, they were in it together, basically.
I feel like it's not really an ingredient, but I feel like the reason it maybe works is that it's a stubbornness that maybe most people these days are very much like, next person, just move on. I think particularly the past 5 years or so with dating apps and stuff, it's a quicker turnaround. But I think, say, with my grandparents, they must have had ups and downs, but I've not been there for the entirety of the 60-odd years, but I get the impression is one thing is like, if there's a family, it's like, oh, well, we stay as a unit. and a lot of people stay together for that. But I think at some point you have to go, what am I going to benefit? Like, how am I going to benefit if I bail here? I'm just going to be starting again. There is an acceptance, maybe in a sad way, I guess, not of true of everyone, where you get past the stage of even thinking about it. And then good stuff happens further down the line because of it. Like my grandparents,
yeah,
I've talked to them about this, that they'd be distraught. They'd be lost if one or the other died, which obviously they will do. And they're both late 80s, 90s now. So it's on the horizon. But there's something romantic about that idea that I think is lost in a way. I mean, we can't say it's lost as such because we're younger, but I feel like that idea of, you know, not wanting to live if the other person isn't there, that's beautiful, I think. That's maybe what romance is.
Yeah.
Boom.
You can get that in a lot of other relationships, though, as well.
Oh, but definitely.
Yeah. I think maybe one of the things is that there's not enough, like, people willing to let go of the idea of what they think their love life should look like.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, even movies add to it, like, what should my partner look like and what should we do together? Whereas letting things go, compromising and reshaping your life, that's a thing. And this is what old Celine talks about in Before Sunrise. It's like shaping, like coming together and like bending to each other a little bit and shaping around each other's lives. Like that's always going to bring something that you never knew.
Well, that's actual,
wanted
that's
or needed or
sharing. I think that's what it's not a spoiler, but it's pretty obvious that the third one, they're a couple with like kids, and it's later in life, and that, pretty much the entirety of that film is the reason they aren't clicking all the time. There is a lot of love and joy in that film, by the way. I'm not saying it's like tragic, like the tragic end and divorce, this kind of stuff, but it's all about compromise. Like one person wants something because they're worried about something else. The other one doesn't want the same change, and they're having to figure out what their lives are going to be from that point, basically. Yeah, I think you're right. Compromise is a big thing. Maybe not compromise and stuff I think it's little compromises and agreeing to take turns. I think that idea of this is my time to shine, can you support me, and vice versa. I think that's important rather than compromising where it's like, look, I'm the one who's going to be famous. You just need to stay at home and work.
Being willing to envision a different future to what you imagined because this person is in your life.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, and same would happen, say someone had a kid, your future's going to look entirely different and you'd no idea what it looks like yet, just let it change.
Well, I feel like the second and third film show quite well is that things get incredibly complicated as soon as you have kids because, I'm not going to spoil it, but I mean, there is another kid involved in between before they have their own. That's all I'll say, where it's like, all right, now we have another thing to consider that isn't just us. And I think like love and romance can be quite selfish. Mm. And going back to what you said, it's like the ideals. Most people don't talk about or show what it really is, which is, it isn't the start. Like that's the chemical rush in your brain and you get addicted to, like, oh God, I'm addicted to this thing. They've shown brain scans that are similar to like when someone's on coke. It's like when you fall in love, it's pretty much as bad for you as being addicted to like a really illicit substance. And then what longer term love is instead of passion is the middle bit, I would say. And you know, the fear of loss, like because all three of these films are about the passage of time and being aware of the present, there is a real sense of loss as well as all the beauty. That's one thing I love about this, is there's an awareness of like growing older and moving forward. And even in the space of the first one, it's like they really treasure that time, but they're also aware like we might not see each other again. Like time is the problem, basically, that you can't solve.
Yeah.
Regardless of how long you stay together.
Yeah, and it's all things aligning, isn't it? And fighting against that can be too hard sometimes if you, like, I don't know, met someone on holiday. I really want to watch the other two films, and I will be doing that.
Good, good.
Yeah. I've got a final question. Yeah, have you had meet cutes? If so, what was your best one?
My memory's so bad that I can't remember the first time I met even like first loves at some
point. Did you never meet anyone traveling or anything?
No, because I went whilst in a relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Or like when I went to Iceland with my friend Liam, it was like, you're not going to meet people in the minus 12.
You had your bromance to work on.
Yeah, we had our bromance. We had our secret time. I think it's such... I don't know if I want to share all of it, just in case.
That's fine.
I want to share it. It's not as such a meet cute, but with one person in particular, it's one of my favourite stories, but it's... Oh, gosh, this is hard. But, okay, so I was filming something at the time, and I think we had met before, but we never really talked properly. And I needed someone to play an extra in the film I was shooting. It's like a week away. And it was a friend of a friend. And the first thing, like as a proper introduction, I said was, how do you feel about getting choked out? And then obviously explained what I meant afterwards. But it was kind of cute because it was such an absurd thing that, you know, everyone laughed. There was like sexual connotations, but really it was like, no, for the film, I need an extra to be like dragged away by this character. And yeah, it was cute from then. And we had met. So it's a meet cute, right?
Yeah. As in that was like romantic thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's about as romantic as I get in the beginning, I guess. That I lead with comedy and, you know, a little bit of charm. And then it takes me a while to become romantic, I think. I'm too closed off and I don't like being vulnerable immediately that it's hard for me to, you know, come up. I don't know. I think maybe it works to my advantage that I'm not turning up at your front door with roses after one date, for instance. Like that appears incredibly creepy.
I mean, but it's all like, it's all context, isn't it? Like if the two people had talked about, I would love these flowers and I'd have like, if they had a night like that before sunrise, that would not really be that creepy. But yeah, if you've had a coffee and had a little text on Tinder, then it's like, why are you here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? Have you got a good meet cute story?
No, not really.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for dropping me in here.
Sorry.
Tune in next week. this week has been by far the stoning of Mike.
It has. I don't think you've come across badly at all. It's just, yeah. Sorry that you've been...
No. And look, it's hard to make me embarrassed. And I haven't been embarrassed. It's just been a series.
It's been a lot.
I put my foot in my mouth all the way through this one.
I've enjoyed it. No, I mean, meet cutes.
Good.
Yeah, I've met people quite normally. I would love a meet cute.
I'm not sure if they exist in the romantic comedy kind of way, though. Like, you know, the kind of bumping into each other. That's just frustrating. That's annoying. Like, how do you start a conversation when someone spilled coffee on you?
My crotch.
That's what they see after a few dates. we're on a roll. All right, I feel like, okay, this one's going to end up being a little bit longer purely because I think it's worth asking, like, do you think there's a romantic ideal? Because... I mean, I would say they are in this, but then I don't know I don't know. I feel like the more you get to know someone, I think it's even, I'm about to quote from the film, the more you get to know someone, they become disappointing. Like, I think the problem is when you first meet someone and start hanging out, you're only getting the good stuff and you only project the good stuff. And I know I do this, like I'll come across great. But then, you know, 6 months in, it's like, ooh, yeah, you're deeply flawed and not a perfect person. Over to you.
What's the question?
Do you think there is a romantic ideal, or do you think there's something, I don't know, what would you say would be an ideal relationship in your opinion?
An ideal relationship? Isn't everyone working that out? I mean, I'm at the start of a relationship right now and I'm really loving it, and I've made myself go slow. I think it's about knowing yourself as well. Never forgetting yourself in the relationship and knowing where you have your downfalls and what's going to freak you out, and just working with it.
Yeah.
As if I can meet someone who I can say anything to and say what's on my mind in a way that's honest, but obviously raw honesty is sometimes like you don't always mean what you think. So I think it's a hard balance. But like, yeah, if I can say stuff that comes to my head that's bothering me as soon as it comes up and it's not a big deal, that's fine for
yeah
me.
I guess it's
that's being, not that romantic, but
no,
you know.
But I think that's the truth of it, is like it's about being comfortable and open, and that can apply to communication, sex, or just saying what happened in your day. I think where issues come in is when people start stopping themselves saying these things, or they aren't open, or they just flat out are lying. That's where things get complicated.
Yeah, usually, I mean, slightly bringing it to Fight Club, usually for fear that you're not good enough. You know, you create these new personas and stuff. So, yeah,
definitely. Yeah, been there. I've been Tyler Durden, that's for sure.
Been Brad Pitt in a fur coat.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Talkies. This week we were talking about romance. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you, and don't forget to tune in next week.